I don't know about that. It's like riding a bike.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for May 17, 2017. I'm going to open this committee. We're going to start with House Bill 3264, and I'm going to open a public hearing on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3264 has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact. Came off of House Business and Labor with a unanimous vote and unanimous off the House floor. It requires the Oregon Department of Transportation to administer a pilot program requiring prompt payment of businesses with up to 50 employees on contracts executed on or after January 1st, 2018, and invoices received before June 30th, 2019 for architectural, engineering, and related services. It requires a report by March 31st of 2019 and sunsets January 2nd of 2020.
Great. We have some esteemed guests. Introduce yourselves. And
thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Janelle Bynum, and I represent House District 51, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, East Portland, and Happy Valley in North Clackamas. I'm glad to be here today to testify on 3264A, which is my bill aimed at improving turnaround time on contracting payments here in Oregon. So in my experience as a small business owner, one of the most important things for success is having working capital on hand. Without it, you're forced to put a lot of plans on hold when there's no time to waste. I was just talking with a gentleman in the back, and he was asking me what's going on in my business now. Did I know about a particular fork that we have as a marketing technique? I have no idea, because we're buying seven HVAC units, which all take cash, and is probably close to $100,000 in expenditures. That's real cash. That's real money that businesses have to have on hand. So when you don't have it, you're forced to put your plans on hold. And I think it's always important to remember that many small businesses are always just very close to the line on whether they make it or whether they don't. We often have loans to pay and work hours well beyond the typical day to keep things afloat. So again, having faster access to capital to your receivables can make or break your business. So House Bill 3264A intends to help with that hurdle and also helps to instill a little bit of discipline or maybe some focus and awareness from the state side on its impact for small businesses. So when you complete a contract, the lag time between completion and payment, it hinders your business's progression. So my idea was to require a 15-day prompt payment to small businesses after the work was complete, and that would go a long way in making sure that our small businesses could continue to compete. So the bill starts a pilot program, which only applies to ODOT specifically, and it's their architecture and engineering contracts. The small businesses would be defined as having 50 employees or less, and ODOT will have 15 days to turn around the invoices. So it forces them to look at their procedures and policies and their workflow process to see if they can speed it up and potentially expand it to other contracts. So in closing, I'm grateful to Matt Garrett and ODOT for recognizing the importance of this issue. I asked him how he knew why this was an attractive project for him, and he said that he grew up with a dad as a small business owner, so he got it. I appreciate him for stepping forward to test it, to hone it, and strengthen the idea, and I'm excited to work with them moving forward so that eventually we could pass those learnings on to other state agencies so that they would be interested in improving and implementing a prompt payment process. So ultimately, we can help Oregon entrepreneurs succeed. So our state is always looking for ways to help small businesses. That was one of the governor's rallying cries at her installation this year. I think it is a bipartisan issue to make sure that we step up for our small businesses, and I hope to have your support on 3264A. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast. And I was sitting here listening to the good representative, and it occurred to me that we probably represent the majority of House members who actually own cash registers. That brings a unique perspective to the process, and I'm not going to repeat all the details she gave you, but I want to reinforce the nature of this problem. For our smallest businesses, cash flow is absolutely critical. And I think that there is a particular problem when working with public entities who want to purchase services or products from us. I have to tell you, in my own small business, we have simply stopped taking purchase orders from various levels of government around Oregon and around the country because it takes such a long, long time to get the money. And it also involves extra effort to chase after that money. And so many times you'll make a phone call back and find out the person who placed the order is no longer there, and the folks that are there don't even know what you're talking about, which makes it one step more difficult to actually collect on a debt that's so very, very important to you when you're a small business and trying to get on your feet and turn into a larger business. So when I saw that Representative Bynum had introduced this bill, I understood exactly what she was getting at and came looking for her to add my name to it. The bill has gone through some changes, and I'm very pleased that ODOT has stepped up to try and create a pilot project so that we can zero in a little more forcefully on the nature of this this issue, and hopefully with their experience that we can come back later and broaden their experience into an even larger policy application. Be happy to answer any questions for you.
Thank you. Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got concern at the 18% interest. It seems rather excessive, and I think ODOT's going to come up and testify perhaps, but I don't know if they can turn a bill around in 15 days. So do either one of you do contract with ODOT currently, and how long does it take for you to get paid?
So I'll let them answer the question about the interest rate. I think that's pretty standard, but I'll let them answer that part. This is applying to architecture and engineering contracts. So we kind of narrowed in on a specific type of contract that we think might be workable. But we should hear from them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator DeBoer, I just want to say for the record that I don't think ODOT uses either enough hamburgers or enough kites. But that being said, I would hope that they could address this issue a little more directly in terms of the turnaround time on payments.
Other questions? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
ODOT, Matt?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Matthew Garrett, and I have the privilege of being the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, just to jump to Senator DeBoer's question. It's a legitimate question, and I would submit to you if we were to do business in the traditional manner, it would be a challenge. But I'm going to challenge my agency. That's one of the reasons we're doing a pilot. That's why we've tailored it to small businesses of 50 employees and below and specific to the A&E discipline as well. So we'll find out. But we will change our practice in the way we do business. To your second question with regard to the percentage of interest, that is standard operating procedure, that 1.5%. So it's the way we conduct business. I think with that, unless there's any other questions, I'll give some just brief comments, and then we can open it up for a greater discussion, sir. Excellent. So I have had the privilege of working with Representative Bynum on the A-engrossed language here, and I believe there is an opportunity for my agency, the Oregon Department of Transportation, and specifically in the disciplines of architecture and engineering, to better inform this overall direction and this overall conversation. Prompt payment and the implications to small business is a significant issue, and it's often reflected in the conversations that myself and my department have with small businesses. As they face the many challenges to just stay in business, to prosper, and to grow. The issues of access to capital, the issues of prompt payment, the issues of bonding and insurance, those become barriers at times. And I think we must pause and reflect as an agency and maybe as an enterprise, are the ways we're doing business actually advantage or disadvantage the folks that we conduct business with? I think with this pilot, we'll have an opportunity to ask just those questions to see what works, to see what doesn't work, to adapt and refine the way we do business on both sides of the transaction. To be very honest with you, it is important that all understand the obligations from an agency perspective to a small business perspective in terms of what you need to send the invoice to ensure that all paperwork is complete so we can engage the transaction. So we'll watch that over the course of the 18 months that this pilot will transpire. I will come back to you and your colleagues and report on the findings, and hopefully we are successful and we can help write the next chapter of this story here. So I want you to know, as director of ODOT, I look forward to this opportunity. I know there'll be some challenges. Please believe me, I understand the gravity that I'm taking on, but I think it will benefit those small firms, A&E firms that we conduct business with, and may inform a greater conversation as we look to the future. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand down.
Questions?
I'll continue.
Go ahead, Senator Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So old contracts used to have 18% since the interest rate has dropped so much. And challenging, if this is a pilot program, I would suggest we drop the interest completely since you're on a pilot program so you don't incur costs during the ramp up of this. I would challenge myself that I don't know if I could pay in 15 days, and this doesn't say business days or 15 days itself, and I would not want to incur any extra costs for ODOT at this time when we're struggling for roads and bridges, and I know this will be a minor amount, and 50 employees seems to me to be not a small business, so those comments.
I think, Mr. Chairman, react to it. That would certainly be a policy decision of you and your colleagues here. I understand where you're coming from, but I would defer to the conversations amongst the body here.
Yes, Senator Thatcher.
It says that this is for the architectural and engineering companies who are doing business directly with ODOT, and this would not go down to the level where a contractor is using one of these entities. It would only be for those directly. Okay.
Yes.
Clarify.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
Following on what Senator DeVore said, I'm wondering if Representative Meyer will come up and maybe address the question about the 15 days. I do see a point there that we may want to look at business days versus just calendar days, knowing that that would give the opportunity to have, you know, the business transacted, and if we can get maybe a little bit more information about the 1.5, why, if that's what is standard rate right now, then that's kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes and yes.
Okay.
happy to take. My interest is really in the discipline of the workflow process, more so than the penalty, more so than the gotcha. So anything that we can do to make sure that the project, the pilot, gets at really the core of the issue, and the core is not the penalty. The core is the workflow. The core is the mindset of the state agencies that says, it is important for us to pay on time. It is important for us to invest in small businesses. When I had original conversations, I think with DAS, it was a very interesting mindset. Their representative told me, well, we pay in 45 days because that's when the penalty starts. And to me, that was kind of exactly what I was getting at. You don't pay because there's a penalty. You pay because that business completed the transaction. They did a satisfactory job, and they also need that money to meet their payroll, to meet their obligations. And that sensitivity of what the transaction involves is something that I think, from a state perspective, that needs to grow. We really, really need to invest in our small businesses and see us as part of our economy rather than somebody that's just presenting a bill and has no claim to their money. So I am happy to clarify the language on business days, if that would suffice. So 15 business days. And the other was you would like to see Senator Riley, Senator DeVore, and Senator Przanski, and you would like to see an elimination of the penalty.
You know, if we're going to have a little dialogue or
yes,
not.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the penalty part, I think there's a, I think you made a very good point. If there's no sanction, what's the incentive for it to happen? I understand Director Garrett is going to do what he said he's going to do. But if we're setting up a program, it seems like we should be doing the pilot with everything that would be part of that. And to me, if a standard operating procedure, which usually is, if you in business, if you don't pay within 30 days or 60 days, whatever it is, the amounts go up. Now maybe we should adjust it down to some to another level than 1.5. But it does seem like that to me it seems to be appropriate. But I do think that the clarification and going to business days, since this is a contract that's going to be with a state agency that normally does not have business hours on Saturdays and Sundays, makes sense.
So I personally think we should ask the department if they think that they're going to be able to meet the 15 days or if they need 15 business days.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I committed to the language of the A. Engrossed bill. We will meet the 15 days. I'll defer to you whether they're calendar, business, okay, or whatever.
Senator Thatcher.
I just want to say I think it is current law for other disciplines to pay under that scenario within 30 days after an agency receives a contractor's invoice or 15 days after the agency approves payment, whichever is earlier. So it's just lining it up with existing practice.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
So I'm going to close this public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 3264A. Would you make a motion?
You want to move it? Or?
Yeah, go ahead.
We got it.
Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 3264A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brzezinski moves House Bill 3264A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, just to be super safe, even though I'm not involved with engineering or architectural services, I just want to declare a potential conflict of interest if I should decide to hire some people and become one. I don't know.
So
to
noted.
Make sure.
So noted. Other discussion? Objections?
Put me down as a no.
This bill is going to the floor. It passes.
And just as an explanation?
Yes, Senator DeBoer.
Chair, I certainly love the concept, and I support small business, but I don't know if it has to be a bill. So.
Thank you. All right.
I'll do it if you want.
Yeah, Senator Brzezinski, if you'll carry. Okay, I'm going to move on to House Bill 3274A. I'll open a public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3274A changes a public records exemption that's applicable to the Office of Small Business Assistance from information that is provided to and communications with the Small Business Assistance Office to information prepared or received by and communications to and from it. That is, it makes the exemption slightly more explicit than it is currently. This comes with no fiscal and no revenue impact, a unanimous vote out of House Judiciary, and a 49-7 on the House floor with one excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For your record, I am still David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. Very pleased to be here today on House Bill 3274, which is actually Representative McEwen's bill, but she is still recovering from a recent health issue, and I'm very pleased to be here to take the lead on this for you today. Representative McEwen and I have worked on the Office of Small Business Assistance since it was first proposed back in, I believe, 2013. 13, and we have been pleased to work with three secretaries of state as this office has evolved, two Democrats and one Republican. Just to clarify the record, the Office of Small Business Assistance is what I refer to as Small Business 911. You're a small business, you got a problem, who do you call? You call the Office of Small Business Assistance, which is based within the Secretary of State's larger operation. What kind of problems might you have? Maybe you are a small business and you're doing a project for ODOT and they haven't paid you promptly. And there's no penalty for them not paying you on time, so you call the Office of Small Business Assistance and they'll open a file and get to work on this problem. So the office started out focused on state agencies. Last session we expanded their authority to deal with all kinds of levels of government. This year, Secretary Richardson came to us with a new issue, and it has to do with public records and proprietary information. And the situation is quite simply this, that when you call in and you outline your problem on behalf of your small business, you are very often going to be sharing information that is unique, that is proprietary, that you would prefer to keep confidential rather than having it become part of the public records process. Maybe it has to do with profit margins. Maybe it has to do with suppliers. Maybe it has to do with the compensation you provide your employees. One way or another, you don't want your concern that you're taking to this office to become a tool that your business competition uses for research purposes. So this measure was proposed to keep that proprietary information confidential. Now, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, one thing I need to emphasize here is that that doesn't mean that the entire case is kept confidential. It doesn't mean that concerns properly raised about state agencies are kept confidential, because when the Office of Small Business Assistance completes their report, they will detail the nature of the issue. They will just simply not detail any proprietary, confidential, or closely guarded information that goes into that report. So it's a good bill that that was proposed by Secretary Richardson. It's an expansion of the efforts that we have made to make this good office even more effective, and I hope you'll give it proper consideration here today.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ruth Miles, the small business advocate for Secretary of State, and I run the Secretary's Office of Small Business Assistance. As you know, the office was created in 2013 to help business owners who are caught in red tape with state government, and so I always joke that I run with scissors. I'd like to address up front the summary for the bill. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not casting aspersions on our wonderful attorneys at the Office of Legislative Counsel, but it describes the bill as an expansion of exemptions from public records law, and in my view, this is really actually a technical fix and not an expansion at all. So if I could explain, the original bill that created the Office of Small Business Assistance included a confidentiality clause that's currently found in ORS 56.203 sub 4. This states, writings and information provided to and communications with the Office of Small Business Assistance under subsection 2 of this section are confidential and exempt from disclosure under ORS 192.410 to 192.505, except as necessary to prepare the report required under ORS 56.206. So you can find this language right now on the bill. It's page 2, lines 15 through 17 of the A. Engross bill. We thought that the intent of that language was pretty clear, and I was disabused of that notion last November. So we were engaged in a rulemaking process with the office to define the word complaint as it's used in our statutes. It's not defined there. We wanted to clarify our procedures when a complaint is received by the office. Our rules advisory, which is a group of business owners and associations that represent a huge swath of Oregon business, asked us what part of a case, what information from a case, if anything, would be subject to public disclosure, and if so, when. We requested as a result of that and received an opinion from Department of Justice. And in their opinion, DOJ offered us two possible interpretations of the existing statute. The broad interpretation was that all of the conversations the office has with state agencies and with the small businesses in the context of a case would in fact be confidential and exempt from disclosure. Except for that final report. The narrow interpretation, which DOJ felt they could defend in a legal setting, was that all of the conversations the office has with state agencies and small businesses in the context of a case are all subject to public disclosure, that nothing was confidential, I'm sure you can imagine this came as a bit of a shock, a real surprise to us. And so we started a conversation about whether or not we needed to ask for clarification from legislators. We were, by the time we received the opinion, well past our filing deadline. And so Representatives McEwen and Gomberg stepped forward and graciously introduced the bill. One other issue that I wanted to bring to your attention, our office and the agency are concerned that there be no unintended consequences from the language in the A engrossed bill in front of you. In particular, we wanted to ensure that all records that are currently subject to public disclosure would not be made exempt simply because they become part of the conversation in the context of a case. So for instance, if a construction contractor licensed by the CCB files a complaint regarding the Construction Contractors Board with our Office of Small Business Assistance, their license record, any debt owed to the agency, any enforcement actions, that should not become exempt from disclosure by the agency just because it's part of the investigation that we undertake with the CCB. So to directly address this concern, the bill was amended in the House to include a sub B paragraph under Section 4. And the language that I'm referring to is on page 2, lines 22 and 23. So this just gives you a high-level view of what brought us before you today with a public records bill during this session. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer, help.
Questions? Senator Hess.
Thank you. I think maybe this is more of an observation. Question. Ruth is just, you're just a legend there for what you've done with small business. So I think you gave this great context, but I just want us to be careful. I mean, ironically, this panel passed these public records bills earlier this session, and the problem with Oregon's public records laws overall that were passed in the 70s have been a sort of a death by a thousand cuts. Mm. They're all like this. They're all very well intended. Make sense, and but after 40 years, you have just what we have, and so I think there's some. It just seems like there's. I mean, you gave it context with that case, but it just seems like the confidentiality agreements should be able to take care of the kind of proprietary things that you were suggesting. That makes sense, and I've signed those before, and you know, that all seems to work. This is public business, and if you have a confidentiality agreement in place, and it's public business that you know safeguards the proprietary information, yet shows the public what's going on, it seems like that's enough. And I do appreciate the context you put into this.
If I could respond, Senator?
Certainly.
Chair Riley, Senator Haas. I'm not sure what confidentiality agreement you would be talking about. All we have to work with is our current statute that I read to you earlier. So we don't have the ability to set in place an agreement with a state agency that would limit any information that they might disclose. And we also don't know at the beginning of a case, and sometimes not even the middle, what kind of information the business will submit to us during the course of the case. We don't know what will be needed, nor do we know what the business owner may decide to voluntarily submit to our office. And so as a result, and I'm sure this is no exception, it's not any different than probably your office, but you know, we've received Social Security numbers and birth dates and such things. Those things, we explain that we don't need that information for our work, but the information that we do need, say about a business's financials. let's use withholding tax for an example. If that were to be made public, you know, that would give a competitor an unfair advantage. And maybe taxes aren't the best example because those are confidential. But there are other proprietary processes that businesses. It's part of the complaint that they've provided to us and asked us to investigate. So we're asking simply for you to consider whether or not a clarification in this language would be prudent, so that we don't have what currently amounts to sort of a disagreement between the attorneys who drafted the bill and did such a wonderful job creating a tight statute, and those who would be responsible for defending the Office of Small Business Assistance were we to find ourselves in a legal situation.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thanks. I think I heard maybe Representative Gombrich refer to a confidentiality agreement. That's where I got that. But some of this, for example, the section that you pointed out, Ruth, on page 2, communications to and from the Office of Small Business. Well, I know why, I can appreciate why businesses would not necessarily want that there, but I could say the same thing about an email that I send to Representative Gombrich. You know, I mean, there are certain things that just assume not read in the newspaper, but it is public business.
If I could respond,
sure.
Chair Riley, Senator Hess, this from the agency perspective, this has to do with the original legislative intent. There are a few legislators here, and I believe you're among them, who voted for the original bill that established the office with the confidentiality clause that's currently in statute. And it's that we're asking for clarification on. And, you know, if the world were to my liking and I could make the law black and white, then I would choose to keep the current statute. But it's not me who would be responsible for defending the office. And so we felt that it was responsible to come before you and pose the problem that we're presented with.
Appreciate those answers. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Ruth Miles.
That's
oh, that's me. I'm sorry, Ruth. Rebecca Gladstone. Sorry, Ruth.
Thank you. Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rebecca Gladstone. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters of Oregon supports transparency and efficiency in government processes. We've submitted testimony this session for public records bills for policy, Senate Bill 481, formation of an advocate, ombudsman, oops, oh no, for the position and the council, Senate Bill 106, and public records request, disclosure, exemption management, House Bill 2101. We recognize this bill as an application of a technical fix. The focus of the bill is to protect communications between small businesses as Office of Small Business Assistance clients and the OSBA. Pertinent statute as written, as was previously quoted, was found inadequate by the Oregon Department of Justice in November. Application of this correction as amended will maintain and protect the originally intended function of the service to provide small business help, allowing free discourse without fear of public airing of private communications describing complaints or confidential casework. Small businesses would be assigned case numbers and relevant communications should be protected. We understand this should not be interpreted as a haven for application of confidentiality to unrelated documents or communications sent to the OSBA. Currently, communications sent by the OSBA are appended with a warning disclaimer. This email communication is subject to ORS 56.203, Section 4, regarding confidentiality. This bill would provide necessary economic privacy for our small businesses seeking state assistance. We urge Senate rules to pass this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to talk to us about Senate Bill 3274? I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3274A.
Chair Riley, I move House Bill 3274A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Borah moves House Bill 3274A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Senator Riley?
Yes.
I'm just going to do a protest, no vote. I appreciate the intent.
Other discussion? Call the roll.
No. Senator
Pajonski?
Aye. Senator Thatcher?
Aye.
Vice Chair DeBoer?
Aye.
Chair Riley?
Aye. So this bill passes and goes to the floor, House Bill 3274, and I will carry it. So I'm going to open a public hearing on 2333.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2333 comes to us with no fiscal and no revenue impact, unanimous out of House rules, and 46-14 on the House floor. It allows state agencies that are unable to sell their interest in state property after following the required statutory process to continuously offer the property for sale using any appropriate means. And then it directs the state agency to repeat that process, the statutory process that's required, only if their sales efforts are discontinued at least 12 months. There currently is no guidance about if and when or whether the agency should repeat that statutory process. So,
Lindsay?
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you today on House Bill 2333. Hopefully this is not a brand new measure for most of you on the committee. So right now in statute, whenever a state agency has surplus real property, they are directed to engage in a very specific process of notification pursuant to statute. That notification involves letting other state agencies know whether they would like to purchase the property, letting other political subdivisions, so cities and counties, nonprofits or tribes, if they're going to use it for housing purposes, know that it's available. If after that point that notice is made and none of those other entities are interested in purchasing that property, then the state agency can essentially put it out to the private market or make it available to everyone outside of those entities noted in statute. Right now, there's reference to an 18-month time period in statute in the provisions that we're opening up in this measure. However, it's unclear what the applicability of that 18-month time period is. Does that mean we have to begin notice and but between the time that it's determined surplus and then just begin notice in that 18 months? Does that mean that we have to be to give notice and then conclude the sale in 18 months? What does it apply to? Just ambiguous. So House Bill 2333 attempts to really clarify what we mean when we're talking about that 18-month time period. So it does two things, as staff mentioned. The first thing is says if you comply with that notification process and you do not conclude within the 18-month time period, you do not have to go back to the beginning and re-notice all of that property so long as you've been actively marketing it during that time period. The second piece of House Bill 2333 is it says if an agency essentially takes a property off the market and does not actively market it for a period of 12 months or longer, then, and it wants to put it back on, it has to go back to that beginning, the beginning notification for the 18-month time period. So with that, that's all the prepared remarks I have. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Did you have, just here to answer questions?
I'm just here to answer questions.
Questions? Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Did you run into this time limit or, you know, problem with the issue on the North Campus? Is that kind of a driver behind this bill?
Senator Thatcher and
name on the record,
Chair,
please.
I'm sorry, Darren Brightman, Oregon Department of Administrative Services. We have not run into this issue with the North Campus at this time. We have run into it a few times with the Mill Creek Corporate Center, which I think most folks are aware is a 30-year supply of industrial land for the Salem area. So obviously we're not going to sell it all in 18 months, I hope.
And if I could make one other note on the record, there was a bit of confusion in the House chamber about whether this change in provision applied to the sale of the Elliott State Forest. And so I wanted to make sure that we're getting on the record that it does not indeed apply to the Elliott State Forest at all.
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2333 and open a work session on House Bill 2333.
Chair Riley, I move House Bill 2333 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Boer has moved House Bill 2333 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Who would like to carry this? This goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Boer will carry it. I'm going to close that work session. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2190.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2190 was heard on May the 10th. We have a limited work session for the purpose of making a record today, committee discussion. This is a measure that allows cities and counties to authorize social games, only if they are operated and controlled by charitable, fraternal, or religious organizations.
So I did want to open this up just for discussion and see what people have to what the committee has to say about this. One of the issue, of course, is whether or not we pass this bill and move stop having private businesses to have card rooms and make it available only to the nonprofits that are listed, and I think we'll just open that up for discussion. Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've given it some thought and looked at the documentation we've received, including the Boley decision, the Department of Justice opinion. And based on that, I think there's actually another way of moving forward than what is currently prescribed in the bill. As we have had the discussion as to what 2190 would require or prohibit would be for-profit businesses from being able to entertain social gaming. I actually think there's a way that that can be done, but it's a pretty narrow scope, and that basically would require that there be no income coming from the games directly to the business that was providing the opportunity for that to occur. So basically, from my reading of the opinion, as well as some of the guidance you get from Boley as to how they define what an employee is, I believe what we'd have to see is something that would allow for a for-profit to continue, but they would not be able to charge an entry fee into their establishment. They would not be able to have any income, as I said, from the games that is directly coming from it. As we've heard and what we've seen, no dealers, anyone that could be somehow associated with the business that would be providing that type of service, no tipping. Income would be limited, as it says in the opinion, to food and drink would be okay. The businesses could, in fact, provide cards or poker chips or whatever other items for those who want to participate. The establishment would not be able to be the bank, as it was determined, to hold the money that the players are putting and wagering. And, you know, the bottom line is that we would have to have a bill that says a bright line that no income could be derived directly from the actual of the games or hosting the games. I don't think this would stop a business who wanted to be providing those types of services to do that. More than likely, you would see it in the arena of someone that provides food and or beverages that would basically promote their establishment as a place where those who wanted to gather to have social gaming and have opportunities to do that would, in fact, be able to do that, but you would have to have those bright lines.
Yes, Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After listening to testimony and stuff, I'm not supportive of the bill, and I think we already have current rules and regulations, and cities address that. So,
yes, Senator Thatcher.
What I keep bumping up against is, and my understanding is that the Oregon Constitution does it allow for these at all? I mean, it seems like they're operating, but it seems like it says, and I don't have it in front of me, but it seems like, okay, we have the Indian casinos, and then we can have gaming with nonprofits. And I'm just wondering, well, and that might not.
Yeah, that's not quite.
I just wondered if.
Yeah, the Constitution basically says that we can't have casinos.
Yeah.
The Constitution does not define casinos.
Yeah.
That's part of the issue, is that the Constitution is unclear in my mind. Not in everybody's mind, but in my mind, the Constitution is unclear because it says we we cannot have casinos, but it doesn't define a casino. And I think that's a problem. The statutes, however, are much clearer. And the card rooms appear to be allowed under the current law with a lot of bright lines that are not bright enough, if you get my drift. But I think that we can maybe find a way to move forward. So that's what I want to try to do at this point. Further discussions on this? So what I want to do is I'm going to carry this forward, this work session forward, to May 24th, Wednesday, May 24th. I'm going to close this work session. And I think that takes us to the end of our agenda, and we're closed. Thank you very much. Agenda, and...